When you're ready, Ms. Tanami.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Your Honors, Butamax's position on claim construction is rather simple. The patents have a definition. It's written in the specification. It is a straightforward definition. It says that a CARI, or an AAIR, is an enzyme that catalyzes the conversion from acetolactate to 2,3-dehydroxyisovalerate using NADPH as an electron donor. This Court can simply say that's the definition. The District Court said that the applicant was its own lexicographer, and if that is the case, then the District Court should allow that lexicography. That definition is consistent with the ordinary definition in the art, and I would like to explain that. In this patent, there are two examples which talk about how one characterizes whether an enzyme is a carry. There are example 2 and example 10. Both of those examples refer to a single assay, which we're calling the ARFN assay, ARFN and Umberger. That assay was the gold standard assay at the time. It is the assay that is referred to in the EC number 1.1.1.86 as the primary reference. To understand that assay is to understand the meaning of claim.
Judge Robinson looked at the claim term which cites to the 11186 European listing, which only lists NADPH. Does that claim term somehow invoke a limitation on to NADPH as a cofactor?
No, Your Honor. Let me explain if I may. The ARFN and Umberger assay is a very simple scientific assay. You take an amino acid sequence, and you say, is that a carry? How do I know? I put it in a test tube. I put in the substrate. And then I put in NADPH. And I measure whether NADPH is being converted to NADP using optical density. One variable. Scientific method. One variable. If I see that that NADPH is changing into NADP, it is donating electrons. And the enzyme has done the substrate-to-product reaction. And therefore, that enzyme, that chemical entity, is a carrier. Now, if I take that chemical entity, which uses NADPH as an electron donor, as indicated in the assay of the patent, and I put it in a system where there is only NADPH, it will use NADPH. If I put it in a different system where it only has NADH, it will use only NADH. If I put it in a mixed system, depending upon the conditions, it will use
anaerobics or aerobic. Right?
In an anaerobic system where there is much, much more NADH,
it's going to use that.
Exactly. So when I say it is all consistent, that is what I mean.
Now, this court had this case on preliminary injunction.
Yes, sir.
And it gave some guidance. Do you think that guidance was followed? Or was that necessary to follow that guidance even? I mean, it was kind of just a thrown-in commentary.
A bit of a suggestion.
I certainly don't think that the district court meant any disrespect to this court. I think the district court did what she felt was correct. I don't think that it was fair for the defendant to argue that this court was telling the district court to just take the word solely out. And that was what Gevo argued to the district court, and that Gevo argued that this court, through its questioning, was really affirming the original claim construction, which just said take out that word. So I think it just, this is an issue of law at this point, and we need to address it as it sits here. Of course,
it was an issue of law at that point, too.
It was, and the court did say that the claim construction was highly questionable, I believe was the language. And the district court judge did what it did.
What do you make of the fact that the specification does make reference to both NADPH and NADH with respect to some of the other enzymes, but yet with respect to this one, it just refers to NADPH?
It's a very important point, and the answer to that is reasonably straightforward. If you look at the specification, and it's talking about other enzymes, you will see that for those other enzymes, there are multiple EC numbers. And if you go into the record and you look through the record, you will see that for one EC number, that the substrates might be slightly different. And the assay, the gold standard assay, may say use NADPH. You may see then the second EC number will say the substrates are slightly different, and the gold standard assay that they're using puts NADH in the test tube. And then there will be a third number where they say use a different assay, and they say you can use either one. None of those things tell you that when their definition says a carry, this chemical entity, uses NADPH as an electron donor, that it implies or states a negative limitation and not NADH and not both or anything like that. It simply says this is the gold standard way we look at it. It's consistent with the assay, which is considered in examples 2 and 10. When the examiner during prosecution of the 889 patent said, how do I know? What's the enablement of carries? The applicant specifically said the assay in example 2 is the way you determine whether it's a carry. So we have consistency in this patent using a straightforward definition. We have the consistency of the ordinary meaning, the consistency of 1.1.1.86, the consistency of example 2 and 10, which was confirmed in the prosecution, the 889 prosecution, which was not considered by the district court, unfortunately. We also have the consistency of allowing claim 14 of the 889 patent to have meaning, and the consistency of having claim 15 of the 188 patent have meaning. Claim 15 is a very important claim. We did not discuss it during the preliminary injunction because we were only here on the 889 patent. Claim 15 specifically claims the four preferred embodiments for a carry. It says wherein the carry is one of these four. And so it specifically claims the Methanococcus example. Specifically. Now, the Methanococcus example in the prior art was known to be NADH utilizing. And as Gevo's expert, Dr. Kirsch, stated, in vivo, it would use more NADH than NADPH. Under the district court's claim construction, that preferred embodiment, which is specifically claimed, does not meet the definition. And so we asked the court to say the Methanococcus example was in the art. It was in the prior art. The district court said, there's only one article and it doesn't have a lot of data in it, so I'm going to disregard it. I believe that is just error. That mathanococcus example is a specific enzyme, a chemical entity, and its properties are one and the same in patent law. Those properties existed. Gevo itself, in its later patent application, the Buelter application, states that the mathanococcus example can be used for this cofactor switching. And when you put all that together, I ask this question. The applicant in the patent application wrote dependent for some enzyme, specific enzymes, not classes of enzymes, specific, where the literature said it. It said that when that's what the literature said. That's fine. If the applicant meant dependent for carry, applicant knew how to use those words because they used them elsewhere. They did not use those words for carry, and yet they are now being read in. And let us consider this. If applicant had put in the claim that the carry is NADPH dependent, what would have happened? The examiner would have said, I'm issuing a 112 rejection. You never say carry is NADPH dependent, you just say using. What do you mean? And the applicant would have to search the specification to show what was meant. What would the applicant point to? The Arthur and Umberger essay, because that's the only information in the patent. And yet, during the pretrial conference, after the summary judgment decision and the claim construction decision, I did walk through with the judge because I did not want to go to trial and say, try to pull a fast one and go around the court's claim construction. I said to the judge, our evidence is that using means using it in vitro in a test, and that if one is going to consider what NADPH dependent means, it would have to be using the Arthenon assay. And the district court, and I said, I don't think that's what you're allowing me to do. And the district court said, no, I'm not allowing you to do that. Thank you for explaining it to me. You're right. So we are precluded under this claim construction from using the very claim, the very test that's in the patent. That should be error. And we ask the court to find a simple definition and allow us to go forward with this case.
Before you sit down, Ms. Benigni, I missed in the discussion of the in the briefs that any mention of your opponents arguing the oral argument before this court in the court below. Where will I find that in the record?
You will find that in the red brief, I believe. Give me a minute. I will.
I'm going to ask your opponent about it, so I wanted to...
And I certainly, in reply, I can come back and give that to you so we don't hold things up. But I would like to just follow this with a few points on the doctrine of equivalence. The summary judgment on the doctrine of equivalence was based on prosecution history estoppel. The district court did not find prosecution history estoppel or even address prosecution history estoppel. Therefore, there should be a reversal of that and a remand to go down on that issue. The district court also compared NADPH with NADH, not carry to carry. That's also an error. And finally, we were left in a very strange position because if one were going to consider the doctrine of equivalence, one would say, well, my closest example within my claim is the Mathanococcus example, because you, Gevo, have admitted in your patent application that it works as well as your accused product. That would be very good doctrine of equivalence evidence. But given the court's claim construction, we cannot rely on the preferred embodiment, which is specifically claimed, to consider doctrine of equivalence. And finally, Your Honors, on written description, both Gevo experts, looking at the specification of the patent, said to them, as those of sports skill in the art, the specification was telling you to knock out the PDC enzyme. Both of them. The undisputed evidence of record is that you could buy a yeast with such knockouts. You could buy it in 2005. You could buy it online.
This is factual anyway, right?
Yes, and so my point is that on summary judgment, there should not have been a finding.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Benami. Ms. Ruyu.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The specification is the primary basis for construing the claims, so I direct Your Honors to A00152, which specifically lays out the definitions that are to govern this specification and these patents. This is in the 188 patent. While the ordinary customary meaning of a term should govern in claim construction, where an inventor defines the term, its own lexicography is what governs. That's what Phillips has told us. The Synard-Chem case indicates that if you have quotation marks, that indicates there is a definition, and that's what's provided here at line 35.
Would you address my question to your opposing counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
My understanding of what she said was that when you went back down, that you argued questions from oral argument. Is that correct? I'm confused by that. So
our understanding was that this court objected to the word solely in the prior claim construction. The court below eliminated that word from the construction, and the construction of the court below was to recognize that
I want to know is where was the argument in the record?
Where
was the argument below in the record so I can look at it? Maybe I'm just confused by what...
In the red brief, Your Honor? In the red brief?
No, in the argument below. Am I confused about that? I may have misunderstood.
I may be misunderstanding, Your Honor, but we did go back and completely brief the claim construction argument. Our arguments are based on the specification primarily, and that's where I'd like to focus today, if I may.
Like my question answered if I...
Yeah, is there anything in the record showing the district court's consideration of the oral argument before this court?
I don't believe that the district court's order specifically notes the order of the Federal Circuit.
Did you argue that in oral argument?
Yes, we did in the transcript.
And where is that in the record?
I don't have that immediately at my disposal. It is in the transcript of the summary judgment argument, which is, I don't believe, in the appellate record. But going back to the specification on columns 7 and 8, it's very clear.
Could I
that the term
ask a question that's going to deal with the specification? Essentially, what has happened here is that you have said that although there may be a customary meaning of the claim term, that they have surrendered significant scope, namely the use of NADH as a cofactor. Is there anything in the record where they say, no, you can't use NADH as a cofactor? Says that specifically, no, NADH can't be used.
Not in those words, but in the definitions.
But isn't that rather important that you show us that?
Well, here it's the doctrine.
Particularly where the specification gives us the ARFN article and gives us claim differentiation and several other arguments to suggest that NADH is available under certain circumstances.
I would like to address both of those arguments.
Please do.
So in columns 7 and 8, it specifically says that these definitions and abbreviations are to be used for the interpretation of the claims and the specification. And the definition of AAIR specifies the using NADPH cofactor. Now,
it doesn't say NADPH dependent, does it?
It doesn't for that specific definition, but it uses this term, using NADPH, in other portions of this definitional section.
But why does that mean dependent?
Because this, in other sections, the term use NADPH or utilizing NADPH is equated with NADPH dependent. And I can turn you to column 12, where there's reference to alcohol dehydrogenase 6. This is column 12.
What line?
At line 54.
54?
Yes. It refers to ADH6 and another enzyme, both of which use NADPH as electron donor. And NADPH-dependent reductase YQHD, active with branched chain substrates, also has been recently identified in E. coli. So
that's simply a statement.
I'm not quite finished. So if we go to Table 1 and we look up this ADH6 enzyme in Table 1, it's toward the bottom. The ADH6 enzyme, it says S. cervicii, ADH6.
I'm on Table 1. And
it's the
which column? Give me column and line.
Column 4, it's
four.
In the table,
yep.
And it's the entry that corresponds to the sequence ID number 201.
What line?
Line 61.
I see it.
60 and 61. The ADH6 enzyme is equated with NADPH dependent. And similarly, in the next entry for Clostridium acetobutylicum, the NADH dependent enzyme is listed, and there, if you go back to column 8, that enzyme is listed as being NADH, using NADH. So we have two examples of equating use of NADPH with NADPH dependent and use of NADH with NADH dependent. The court found that
I'm still not understanding how that gets around the ARFN article, which says you can use either.
The ARFN article is, let me just finish this point, which is that the specification in the definitional section identifies enzymes that use NADPH, enzymes that use NADH, and enzymes that use NADPH or NADH. There are these three definitional buckets. And the interpretation that Butamax is propounding is eliminating the distinctions between these buckets. And to do that, they're rendering meaningless significant portions of this definitional section, specifically the definition of the branched chain alcohol dehydrogenase, which refers to enzymes that use NADH and or NADPH. And further down, the term acylating aldehyde dehydrogenase, also using either NADH or NADPH. Now let's talk about the ARFN and Umbarger assay. That assay is in the example section. The example section in the prefatory language specifically says that these are used for illustrative purposes only. This is not a definition. The ARFN and Umbarger assay appears nowhere in the definition of the AAIR in column 7. So that prefatory language for the examples is at column 26, line 25. It should be understood that these examples, while indicating preferred embodiments of the invention, are given by way of illustration only.
But
so
if they're a preferred embodiment,
sure.
That, we have said over and over again, is almost per se a definition of what the claimed invention encompasses.
But the assay isn't the preferred embodiment. If you go to example 2 at column 33, the example says the purpose of this prophetic example is to describe how to clone the ILVC gene from E. coli K12 and express it in E. coli BL21A1. This is a specific E. coli enzyme. There's no question that that's an NADPH-dependent enzyme. And in order to confirm that that enzyme was properly cloned...
What do you do with the claim differentiation argument,
AAR.
Claim 14?
Claim differentiation cannot trump the lack of written description.
No, but it certainly confirms a customary meaning and a broad chemical definition that is used by the patent, right? If it's confirmed, in other words, I see you'd like to switch the burden to them to show that NADH is something necessarily to be used, but I perceive our law as putting the burden on you to show that they somehow disclaimed the use of NADH. And so I'm trying to find anything in here that says, no, you cannot use NADH.
The disclaimer of NADH...
Is there anything like that?
It comes from the express definition of these three buckets of enzymes. Those that use NADPH, those that use NADH, and that those that use NADH...
But I have to infer from that that they somehow intended the carry enzyme to be in one bucket and have nothing to do with the other bucket.
And, you're tied up by what you said before, which was, in answer to Judge Rader's question, you said not specifically.
The definitions identify these categories. The reason that they've identified those categories, and the court below found that use NADPH was synonymous with NADPH dependent. The reason that they did that was because they weren't in possession of carries that used NADH. And the record shows that very clearly in at A18346. This is an internal document from 2007, 2 years after this patent was filed.
A18346. Okay.
In this discussion of the results from 2007, the scientists within Butamax recognized that the AAIR, the carry, is NADPH dependent. They recognized there's this imbalance of NADH and NADPH. That's a problem for them. And down below it says, in the long term, acetohydroxy acid isomeryl reductase may be engineered to prefer NADH. They weren't in possession of this stuff, and that's why they deliberately did not claim it in the 2005 patent application that led to the 188 and 889.
What's the next sentence mean? In the short term, they're generating some excess NADH.
In the long term...
I saw in the long term. I'm asking about this next sentence.
In the short term, 1 mole of excess NADH is generated for each mole of isobutanol formed. That means that in the isobutanol pathway, the pathway is generating more NADH than NADPH, and that's resulting in a bottleneck at this enzyme. And that's specifically acknowledged at A18341. This is a December 2005 document from Butamax. There, they specifically recognize that the carry enzyme is the Achilles heel of the isobutanol pathway. They refer to that enzyme as NADPH dependent. They say they expect to engineer this to be specific for NADH to avoid yield loss associated with NADPH production. There's an imbalance in this pathway between the availability of the NADPH cofactor and the fact that the carry that they claimed uses...
Is this part of the extrinsic evidence that the district court is looking at?
This is part of the extrinsic evidence, but it just confirms the specification, which shows that there were these three buckets, and that they only claimed the bucket that uses NADPH, that is, as NADPH dependent.
Are you saying in these three buckets that each bucket is exclusive?
Yes.
So that...
Yes, I am, Your Honor. And that's the way that their expert understood it.
I mean, if there are things that use NADPH and things that use NADH, that doesn't necessarily mean only NADPH or only...
That's correct.
Did the district judge refer to this material on 18341 and 18346?
We certainly cited to it, and I couldn't tell you...
She did not cite to it, is what you're saying. She did not rely on it.
We provided it to her.
Thank you. I think the answer was No, there's nothing expressed that she relied on it.
Going to the Misanicotti.
She didn't say at any point that they did not possess NADH, did she?
What she did say was that those of skill in the art understood that uses NADPH is equal to NADPH dependent. She reviewed the voluminous record and the publications that were raised by Butamax, and her fact-finding below was that scientific references almost exclusively characterized carry enzymes at that time as being NADPH dependent. And that explains why use NADPH fell into this bucket of those that prefer NADPH or are dependent on NADPH.
I come back to again, is there anything other than your inferences that says expressly you cannot use NADH in this catalytic reaction as a cofactor?
There is nothing that expressly says you cannot use NADH. The definitions define three exclusive categories, those that use NADPH, those that use NADH, and those that use either. And so if you
Where in the specification does it say exclusive? These buckets are exclusive.
It's in reading the specification in columns 7 and 8 and in identifying the way that they've described and used these terms, the way that they've described enzymes in using these terms.
Chief Judge Rader's words, you're drawing an inference, are you not?
Right.
Our law requires that if you're going to disavow some scope, it's got to be, you know, words of manifest exclusion.
I think that's the case where it's strictly evaluating what the common and ordinary meaning is. But in this case, lexicography governs, and the lexicography demonstrates that there were these three categories of nicotinamide utilizing enzymes. If you're to interpret use NADPH to say that any use as detected by the Arfin and Umberger assay, which forces you to show use of NADPH because that's the only cofactor that's provided in that assay, then you've eliminated these three important distinctions that were deliberately laid out in columns 7 and 8 in defining these enzymes.
You made reference earlier in your argument in the 188 specification to places where there was examples of equivalency between something that is using and something that is dependent.
Yes.
But that equivalency isn't used in association with the
carry enzyme?
The carry enzyme. So
it's
not. Doesn't that cut the other way? Because that shows that if the applicant really intended this to be dependent, they knew how to say that. They said it with respect to other things, but they didn't say it with respect to the carry enzyme.
I don't believe that's the case because the section is preceded by the suggestion that these definitions are for the interpretation of the claims and the specification. So if you're trying to interpret what does using NADPH mean in the context of the definition for AAIR, then you must also look at the other uses of using NADPH in the definition section. And as I said before, if you're to eliminate the distinctions between these categories, then that renders meaningless the express definitions that were provided by the patentee. And as for the Methanococcus example, that example is, even if you accept what they say, which relies on extrinsic evidence, the Zing reference, which is never cited in the patent, it's still an enzyme that is that prefers or is dependent on NADPH by at least a factor of 2. But better than that, you go back to the specification, which specifically cites to the Methanococcus enzyme at line 45 of column 7. There's a GenBank number that's cited to there, and that GenBank number takes you to a publication, which is the Henriksen publication, And the Henningsen publication, at A18288, it's a figure, and about in the middle of the figure shows pyruvate to KIV. That's the relevant reaction here. It shows NADPH as a cofactor, not NADH. So based on the
information...
It doesn't
say you can't use NADH. It just shows NADPH.
It shows that...
You have a final thought for us here?
Pardon me?
You have a final thought for us, Ms.
The final thought is that both with this argument on claim construction and with the written description argument, the patentees are trying to preempt the future before it has arrived. They're trying to claim things that they hadn't invented, that were not part of the written description. This was evidenced by the Donaldson continuation in part. That
well, it sounds like
the
then you may have an improvement patent, which you could file, and there would perhaps be blocking patents that would be determined as to their value in the future. It doesn't sound to me like you've created an exclusion on their use of a broad customary definition.
They simply weren't in possession of cars that use NADH, and that's demonstrated by the fact that later the NAD, the AAIR definition was revised in the Donaldson CIP to include use NADH in addition to use NADPH, that tells you that we use NADPH before referred only to the first bucket.
Thank you, Ms. Ruyu. And Ms. Benami, you have your rebuttal time.
Your Honor, I would like to answer Judge Wallace, if I may, to start. At A10097, in the summary of the argument on summary judgment of infringement.
10097.
Unfortunately, there are pages that are taken out over time, so the numbers are not, they aren't chronological or sequential, but there are missing pages, obviously. It takes a while to find.
Okay. I'm there.
It is where we're looking. But in that page, under B, summary of argument B, 1B, it says the Federal Circuit's affirmance does not question the essence of this court's earlier claim construction. In A10781, which is argument, that is a miniscript.
Yeah.
10781.
Okay.
10781, looking at the bottom.
Bottom of line 25, Federal Circuit fundamentally agreed with your construction.
Yes, 25 going up to 26.
See, I underlined that in red, so I must have seen.
Yes. So, and we point the other things out in our brief, but I think hopefully I've answered your question on my basis.
Ms. Benami, column 7 does use the term using NADPH, and of course, Ms. Ruyu takes that from using to NADPH dependent. But it does say using NADPH.
Yes, and so this is an issue of false logic, basically. If I am NADPH dependent, I am using NADPH. But if I am using NADPH, it does not mean I am necessarily NADPH dependent. That is the distinction.
Well, of course, she goes on to say there are buckets, and the buckets show that by using NADPH, you meant only NADPH.
Well, what I would say to that, Your Honor, is there are no buckets. It is a continuum. That's what Gevo's own expert, Dr. Kirsch, stated. He testified to that. It's in our brief.
Is this after Arising Technology? Did you possess NADH at the time?
Well, we had the Methanococcus example, actually, which Gevo has tested, or Caltech working with Gevo tested and proved, was NADH utilizing, and which Gevo's patent application specifically states can be used as for NADH dependence, and which Dr. Kirst said in vivo will use 10 times more NADH than NADPH.
So I seem to be right that this was an improvement patent, if anything?
I think if someone figures out how to make a carry which they prefer and it's not anticipated or obvious, they may have an improvement. But if I've built an engine and you build a turbocharged engine, it's still an engine. And so this case boils down to a pretty simple thing. The fact that I use something doesn't mean it's necessarily dependent. The fact that something, it means it's using it. There's a clear assay. There is nothing about carry in this patent anywhere which gives you a test for dependency. And I will end with this, Your Honor, since my time is really up, I think.
Well,
but I
gave a little extra time to Ms. Ruyu as well.
I think I need to make this point. When we decide claim construction, I think we need to decide based on consistency and definitiveness. Consistency here requires the simple definition because for all the reasons we've gone through. But it's also important to note that the district court, in deciding it meant dependent, and it's in a footnote where she really goes through it, stated that she had searched not only the record, but the after art, after 2005. She had looked through this, and she said, you can't, there's nothing to quantify this. And she confirmed that during oral argument. We couldn't figure out how one would measure this, she said. And so she said, we'll let the experts go to the jury and tell the jury what they think this term of art means. That is basically having the two experts argue claim construction to the jury, which fundamentally is not allowed under the jurisprudence of this court. You have a simple definition, it's clear, it's supported by the test in the patent. You have an alternative definition, which is not in the patent, not in the tests, which can't be quantified, and we'll have competing experts get up and talk about what that means in the art, having scoured the record. But the one thing it cannot mean, according to the district court, is the test in the patent. That must be error. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you very much to both counsel.